ॐ ज्ञानकमिदं दस्य जनार्जनशलकय चक्षुसुमिलितञ्जेन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनुभूतां स्थपितं येन कुशले सायं गमयं दधति स वंशकौपतुर्भ्यश्च श्रीपसिन्धुभयेभ्यश्च प्रतितनं पवने गोवैष्णवेन नमो नमः So Kamsa, after hearing the voice of the demigods, the Akashvani it is called, the voice, unembodied voice in the sky, saying that the eighth child of Devaki will kill you, you're so foolish that you're driving this chariot. You're driving the chariot, you're facilitating your own death. So foolish. So immediately, at one moment, Kamsa, who had been feeling affection, natural affection for his sister, immediately grabbed her by the hair, took out his sword, and was about to kill her. And Prabhupada explains this is the affection of a demon. Factually speaking, manaratena asato bhavato bahi. This is the material world, where everyone ultimately is self-centered. So what question is there for commitment? What question is there for fixed affection? When everyone is self-centered, if something goes against one's conception of pleasure or his own self-interest, then he will reverse everything. Manaratain. He's riding on the chariot of his mind. Whatever his mind grasps as his pleasure, he will accept that thing and reject everything else, even up to the position of killing his own sister. This is Kamsa's position because his mentality was demonic. And before we think that Kamsa is the only one with that demonic mentality, practically speaking, it's everyone in the world. Because we've turned our back on Krishna, on pleasing Krishna. We've turned our back on pleasing Krishna. Krishna bule se jeev, forgetting Krishna, nadiya bahimukh. Turned our back on him. And therefore, rather than having Krishna in the center of our life, our existence, our decision-making process, what will please Krishna, instead of thinking like that, we think what will please me, and that is manaratena sato davato bahi. That is being on the mental platform. And the mind, one moment it is thinking one thing will please him, then the next moment, like Kamsa was thinking, at one moment he was thinking, showing some affection to my sister will be pleasing for me. He was at the center. Then he heard the voice in the sky and his whole thinking process shifted. His mind grasped onto the very opposite thing. Instead of showing my sister affection will please me, now because it is threatening my life, my sister threatens my life by her very existence, killing her will please me. This is a demonic mentality. This is the mentality of every conditioned soul. Starkly, embarrassingly selfish. As in Vrindavan, there's one old man who says, Dadu, he says, I am the worst kind of fish, a selfish. In the material world. So immediately, wanting to pacify Kamsa, this is text 36, who was so cruel and envious that he was shamelessly ready to kill his sister. Shamelessly. The great soul Vasudeva. Why is Vasudeva a great soul? How do we know that Vasudeva is a great soul? Because he's the father of Krishna. Krishna doesn't come to an ordinary person. Only a great, exalted Vaishnava. So that great soul Vasudeva, who was to be the father of Krishna, spoke to him, Kamsa, in the following words. So Vasudeva, from text 37 to 45, how many verses is that? 37 to 45. Yes. 8 verses. He's going to give him some advice. On one hand, he's going to speak philosophy. But actually what he's trying to do is terrify him, frighten him. For what purpose? So that he won't commit this abominable activity of killing Devaki. But he's going to do it with philosophy. My dear brother-in-law Kamsa, because now they were relatives, you are the pride of your family. What is that called? Flattery. You are the pride of your family, the Bhoja dynasty, and great heroes praise your qualities. You have so many wonderful qualities, everyone knows this. How could such a qualified, exalted person, kill a woman? He was a Kshatriya. How could he kill a woman? A battle fighting amongst Kshatriyas takes place only amongst equals. When the warriors would fight, and one of the warriors, would knock the sword out of the other's hand, he wouldn't just kill him. No, he would say, pick up your sword. Now we are unequal. I have a sword and you don't have a sword. So pick up your sword or choose another weapon and I will take that weapon. Because there is no valor in killing someone who is weak, unarmed, their back is facing you. There's no valor in that. There's no elevation of consciousness. Brahmins, their elevation of consciousness was exhibited through the philosophy. Somewhat theoretical. And based on that, they would act. But specifically Kshatriyas, their strength was their action. They acted. They didn't hesitate in going into a battle because of the depth of their realization that they were eternal souls and that if they were killed in the battle, they would be elevated. Their conviction was so strong and they demonstrated it on the battlefield. That was their faith. So you, who is such a powerful Kshatriya, everyone says that you're the jewel of your dynasty, the pride of your dynasty. You're going to kill a woman to save your life? And not only is she a woman who is weaker, she's your sister. Your own sister, you're going to kill her? And not only is she a woman, and not only is she is your sister, but this is on the day of our marriage. Will this do your fame any good? Oh, great hero, text 38. One who takes birth is sure to die. For death is born with the body. One may die today or after 100 years, but death is sure for every living entity. So you're going to ruin your honor, ruin your qualities, destroy your fame by you, a great powerful Kshatriya, killing a woman, to protect yourself from what? To protect yourself from death. But can you protect yourself from death? Will killing Devaki protect you from death? For one who is born, death is certain. Prabhupada's purport. So he's preaching to him very strongly. Vasudeva wanted to impress upon Kamsa that although Kamsa feared dying and therefore wanted to kill even a woman, He could not avoid his death. Death was sure. Death is sure. Why then should Kamsa do something that would be detrimental to his reputation and that of his family? Sometimes, especially in previous days, people would not want to bring dishonor to their family. They had so much honor and pride in their birth and their family. Now no one cares about anything. Their own reputation, their family's reputation. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, jatasyahi dhruvam mrityur dhruvam janma mrityasya cha tasmara parihalye arte natam sochitam arhasi. For one who has taken his birth, death is certain. For one who is dead, birth is certain. Therefore, in the unavoidable discharge of your duty, you should not lament. One should do one's duty. And the worst thing that can happen is one dies. Okay, so if we don't do our duty because we fear death, will that stop our death? Everyone fears death. Confront the problem directly. Confront the fear of death. Confront the eternal souls. Difficult position within a temporary material body that is doomed. Confront it directly. Become realized. Prabhupada continues, one should not fear death. Rather, one should prepare oneself for the next birth. One should utilize one's time in his human form to end the process of birth and death. It is not that to save oneself from death, one should entangle oneself in sinful activities. This is not good. Now he's going to take the argument further. When the present body turns to dust, and it is again reduced to five elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, the proprietor of the body, the living being, automatically receives another body of material elements according to his fruit of activities, according to how he's lived his life. He gets another body. So to protect this body, my dear Kamsa, you're going to perform activity, an activity that is so sinful. You're going to ruin your reputation. That's the first thing. Because you're known as a hero. But also, you're going to perform such a sinful activity that when you take your next body and you can't avoid this gross body dying and the soul going to a next body, you due to your sinful activity are going to have to suffer. When the next body is obtained, he gives up the present body. So this is actually also describing that as soon as one's next body is set, then one gives up the gross body. And Prabhupada's explained that when a person gets sick or he gets into some very extremely physical difficult condition and he goes into a coma, and he may be in a coma for hours or days or sometimes weeks or sometimes even years. What that means that in one sense his consciousness has already left his body, but his next body has not been decided. So it's an in-between stage. Just like, I think the example will be given now, yes, text 40. Just as a person traveling on the road rests one foot on the ground and then lifts the other, or as a worm on a vegetable transfers itself to one leaf and then gives up its previous one. These kind of worms, caterpillars really, called inchworms. They're caterpillars. And they have a funny way of walking. They move this side up, and when that side's up, there's a loop, and then they move the front forward, and they walk in that way. They inch themselves forward, or they centimeter worm, as it should be called nowadays, since everything is metric. So what this does, this caterpillar, it goes onto one leaf, it's walking along, and it touches the other leaf and grips that, and then he brings up his the rear part of his long body with its tens of legs. And then, and he doesn't do that. He doesn't leave one leaf until he's actually firmly situated on the other. So similarly, according to how we act in our life, sinfully or piously, we are preparing for our next body. And when that is sure and fixed, either sinfully or piously, then we leave this body behind, like the caterpillar leaves the leaf behind. So he's warning, Vasudeva is warning Kamsa, be careful. By this sinful act, you will not stop your death. You're trying to kill your sister Devaki because you fear death. But you cannot stop your death. Rather, you're going to be, you're readying yourself for a horrible situation in your next life due to your sinful activities. 41. Having experienced the situation by seeing it or hearing about it, one contemplates and speculates about that situation, he continues. And thus one surrenders to it, not considering his present body. In other words, we're thinking about something. There's something that we wish to do. Or even more powerfully, when there's something we're afraid of, the mind can't keep off that. The mind dwells on those things. Surrendering to it, and he forgets his present body, he forgets his present situation, he gets so absorbed on the mental platform, he forgets the reality of his current situation. Similarly, by mental adjustments, one dreams at night of living under different circumstances, in different bodies, and forgets his actual position. We actually forget our position. Through the strength of some mental situation. Under the same process, one gives up his present body and accepts another. We leave this, we forget this body, and we accept another. We'll read from Prabhupada's purports, long purport, and we'll read some of it. Starting just in the second paragraph. The Krishna consciousness movement offers a process of transcendental activities wherein the mind is fully absorbed in affairs pertaining to Krishna. And this is the secret. This is what all the work, engagement that one does is supposed to accomplish. Smartavya satatam vishnu vishmartavya na jatichit. Sarva vidina shela cha itya eva kinkara. That all the rules and regulations and practices are meant to fix our mind so that we remember Krishna. So we want to become absorbed somehow or another, in affairs pertaining to Krishna. The mind should be absorbed in Krishna. The presence of the soul is perceived by consciousness. This is the symptom of the soul. And one must purify his consciousness from material to spiritual, or in other words, to Krishna consciousness. That which is spiritual is eternal, and that which is material is temporary. Without Krishna consciousness, one's consciousness is always absorbed in temporary things. So somehow or another, everything we should do, everything that we do, should be connected to Krishna in one way or another. Whether we have a job and work, then we have to think, oh, Krishna is engaging me in this work. This is working for him. I have to give him some of the fruit of my work. Or we're chanting Hare Krishna, trying to praise Krishna, or doing this or that. The whole process of cleaning the temple or doing the deity worship it is meant, or distributing books, it is meant to absorb our consciousness somehow to Krishna, in Krishna consciousness. And everything can be connected to Krishna. For everyone, therefore, Krishna recommends in Bhagavad Gita 9:34, Manmana Bhava Madbhakto Madhyaji Mam Namaskaru. One should always be absorbed in thought of Krishna. One should become his devotee. One should always engage in his service and worship him as the supreme great, and one should offer him obeisances. This is this is what surrender, practically speaking, means to Krishna. Become absorbed in him. Manmana, your mind, Krishna says, should be absorbed in me and become my devotee and offer your obeisance to me. Serve me. Worship me. In the material world, one is always a servant of a greater person. And in the spiritual world, our constitutional position is to serve the Supreme, the Greatest, Param Brahma. This is the instruction of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Jivera Sarupoi Krishnair Nityadas. To act in Krishna consciousness is the perfection of life and the highest perfection of yoga, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Yoginam api savesham madgeten antaratmanam sharavan bhajate yomam same yuktatamo mataha. Of all yogis, he who abides in me with great faith, worshipping me in transcendental loving service, is most intimately united with me in yoga and is the highest of all. The condition of the mind which flickers between sankalpa and vikalpa. What does sankalpa and vikalpa mean? Yes, that's what the mind is continuously doing. And amazingly enough, the mind accepts something as wonderful 1 minute, and that very same thing the next minute it can reject. This is the mind, and people are on the mental platform. That's what it means. Manaratena sato davato bahi. On the mental platform means whatever the mind is accepting, I think it's, I accept it. And then as soon as the mind rejects something, I think I reject it. I'm riding on the chariot of the mind, thinking that what the mind thinks is me. And we're experienced to know that the mind can, again, it can accept something and reject the same thing a moment later. And yet we take it so seriously. So dangerous to do that, because what the mind is absorbed in and it's flickering, chanchanam hi mana Krishna, it's flickering, unsteady, astiram. Very dangerous, because what the mind is focused on is very important in transferring the soul to another body at the time of death. Yam yam vapi smaram bhavam tyajan yante kalevaram tam tam evaitikyante asaritad bhava bhavata. Whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, that state he will attain without fail. So what the mind happens to be grasping, when we die, when we're dying, we will go to that place. And if who knows what it would be? Because at the time of death, it's so terrifying, you don't know what you're going to think of. This is the great test. It's not that I'll be able to sit back and think, it appears that I'm dying right now. So I better really be careful what I focus my mind on. I shouldn't focus my mind on that. No, I should focus my mind only on Krishna, yes. What form of Krishna will I focus on? It's not that one will coolly be able to discriminate about these things, that this terror enters the heart at death. Especially if one has material attachments. And there's so much pain. So the mind just grasps where it finds its shelter. So where does the mind find its shelter? Each individual takes shelter. We can test ourselves when we're in difficulty. Where do we go for shelter? Who? How many? Well, just when there's difficulty, just with a full heart chant Krishna's names. take shelter of Krishna. Usually, that's the least I can speak for myself. The mind, my mind rejects that. Rejects that. No! Therefore, Prabhupada explains, because of the importance of this. And this is what Vasudeva is speaking to Kamsa. Therefore, one must train the mind in the system of bhakti yoga. That means to become attached to Krishna. As did Maharaj Ambarish, who kept himself always in Krishna consciousness. Savai mana Krishna pararavindayo. One must fix the mind at the lotus feet of Krishna 24 hours a day. If the mind is fixed upon Krishna's lotus feet, the activities of the other senses will be engaged in Krishna's service. Rishikesha, Rishikena, Sevanam, Bhakti, Uchate. To serve Rishikesh, the master of the senses with purified senses, is called Bhakti. Those who constantly engage in devotional service are situated in a transcendental state above the material modes of nature. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Mam chayo vivacharena bhakti yogena sevate saganan samatityaitan brahmabhuyaya kaupate. One who engages in full devotional service, who does not fall down in any circumstance, at once transcends the modes of material nature and thus comes to the level of Brahman. So this is the glory of Krishna consciousness. It immediately, just by always being absorbed in Krishna, sagunan samatitta, one transcends the gunas, the modes of material nature, the material world, Brahmabhuya, and he's situated on the spiritual platform. One must learn the secret of success from the Vedic literatures, especially when the cream of Vedic knowledge is presented by Bhagavad Gita as it is. Because the mind, this isn't, now it's, now an interesting point is coming. Because when we think, oh, when I think of what my mind does and where it goes and how hard it is for me to control this mind, by hearing this, rather than becoming thrilled, I get depressed and miserable. What will become of me? Attracted to so many things other than Krishna. But now Prabhupada will explain something very interesting. Not that that wasn't interesting, but this is also very interesting. Because the mind is ultimately controlled by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, the word apasmriti in the verse is very significant. Is significant. Forgetfulness of one's own identity is called apasmriti. This apasmriti can be controlled by the Supreme Lord. For the Lord says, Mata smritir jnanam apavanam cha. For me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. Instead of allowing one to forget his real position, Krishna can revive one's original identity at the time of one's death, even though the mind may be flickering. Although the mind may work imperfectly at the time of death, Krishna gives a devotee shelter at his lotus feet. Therefore, when a devotee gives up his body, the mind does not take him to another material body. Takvadeyam puna janma naiti mam iti. This is Krishna's special dealings with his devotee. So the trick, therefore, is to become a devotee, or better still, to become a devotee of a devotee. Tadhyanam samacharam. Then Krishna accepts us as his very own and takes special care. Ye bhajanti tumam bhaktya maya titesha chapyaham. Krishna takes the devotee to that place where he is engaged in his pastimes, mamiti, as we have already discussed in previous verses. One's consciousness, therefore, must always be absorbed in Krishna, and then one's life will be successful. Otherwise, the mind will carry the soul to another material body. The soul will be placed in the semen of a father and discharged into the womb of a mother. The semen and ovum create a particular type of body according to the form of the father and mother. And when the body is mature, the soul emerges in that body and begins a new life. This is the process of transmigration of the soul from one body to another. Tata dehantara prapti. Unfortunately, those who are less intelligent think that when the body disappears, everything is finished. The entire world is being misled by such fools and rascals. But as stated in Bhagavad Gita, nahanyate hanyamane sharire, the soul does not die when the body is destroyed. Rather, the soul takes on another body. So a very powerful purport by Srila Prabhupada. Vasudev continues preaching. At the time of death, according to the thinking, feeling, and willing of the mind, which is involved in fruit of activities, one receives a particular body. In other words, the body develops according to the activities of the mind. Adishtayam manaschayam visya upasevate. Changes of body are due to the flickering of the mind, for otherwise the soul could remain in its original spiritual body. So then, again, the question comes, how to control the flickering mind? We'll read some of Prabhupada's purport. By regulative practice, one can control the mind. And this is the purpose of the yoga system. Abhyas yoga yuktena. But there is a chance of failure with the yoga system, especially in this age of Kali, because the yoga system uses artificial means. If the mind is engaged in bhakti yoga, however, by the grace of Krishna, one can very easily control it. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has recommended Harinama, 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 Iva Kevalam. One should chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. For the holy name of the Lord is none different from Hari, the Supreme Person. By chanting the Hare Krishna mantra constantly, one can fix the mind on the lotus feet of Krishna. Savai mana Krishna padaravindayo. And in this way achieve the perfection of yoga. Otherwise, the flickering mind will hover on the platform of mental speculation for sense enjoyment, and one will have to transmigrate from one type of body to another, because the mind is trained only in relation to the material elements, or in other words, to sense gratification, which is false. Maya sukaya bharam udvahato vimudan. Rascals, vimudan, being controlled by mental speculation, make huge arrangements by which to enjoy life temporarily, but they must give up the body at the time of death when everything is taken away by Krishna's external energy. Mrityu sarvaharascham. At that time, whatever one has created in this life is lost, and one must automatically accept the new body by the force of material nature. In this life, one may have constructed a very tall skyscraper, but in the next life, because of one's mentality, one may have to accept a body like that of a cat, a dog, or a tree, or perhaps a demigod. So Vasudeva is preaching. Just imagine the situation. Kamsa is there with a sword, about to kill Devaki, and he's preaching like this, philosophically, about the difference between the soul and the body. Another example. When the luminaries in the sky, such as the moon, the sun, and the stars, are reflected in liquids like oil or water, they appear of different shapes, sometimes round, sometimes long, and so on, because the movements of the wind. So the wind is moving the water, and the sun or the moon that's reflected in the water or the oil appears to change its shape, even though it itself doesn't change its shape. The moon or the sun doesn't change its shape, but it certainly appears to by the changing of the water due to the wind. Similarly, when the living entity, the soul, is absorbed in materialistic thoughts, he accepts various manifestations as his own identity because of ignorance. So as the shape of the moon or the sun appears to change the living entity, when the wind of his mind or his mental concoction or his mind shifts, he feels himself shifting and his shape changes. Something happens in the material world. We lose something that we're attached to, and we feel our heart dropping. We become miserable. Our whole life seems empty. Or on the other hand, if we gain something that we weren't expecting or that we wanted, then our whole life shifts and becomes focused, and the whole world looks bright and wonderful. But we haven't shifted or changed at all. This is just mental concoction, as Prabhupada calls it. This is just the movements of the mind. And we see that in one day our mind will shift 1,000 times through happiness and distress and liking this person and not liking that person, feeling hopeless, feeling hopeful. It says change in shape after shape after shape. And if this is all we have, this mana retain asato davato vahi, this mental platform, how confusing and miserable our life must be. If all we have is whatever our mind happens to be identifying with at this particular moment, what a precarious position. This is called material life. So similarly, when the living entity, the soul, is absorbed in material thoughts, when he's absorbed in the mind, he accepts various manifestations as his own identity. So the moon is shifting because of the wind is looking very long, so we think that we are very long. But this has nothing to do with us. So this is due to ignorance. In other words, one is bewildered by mental concoctions because of agitations from the modes of material nature. We'll read the first paragraph only of Prabhupada's purpose here. This verse gives a very good example by which to understand the different positions of the eternal spiritual soul in the material world and how the soul takes on different bodies. Dehantara prapti. The moon is stationary and is one, but when it is reflected in water or oil, it appears to take different shapes because of the movement of the wind. Similarly, the soul is the eternal servant of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But when put into the material modes of nature, it takes different bodies. Sometimes as a demigod, sometimes a man, a dog, a tree, and so on. By the influence of Maya, the illusory potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the living entity thinks that he is this person, that person, American, Indian, cat, dog, tree, or whatever. This is called Maya. When one is freed from this bewilderment and understands that the soul does not belong to any shape of this material world, one is situated on the spiritual platform, Brahma-Bhuta. So that way, if one becomes free from identifying with the mind, which is being pushed around by the modes of material nature, and instead of identifying with the particular shape that the mind happens to be in, which will dictate the shape the next body will happen to be in, instead if he identifies with being, I am Krishna's servant, then he successfully used his life. Then one is situated on the spiritual platform. But this is the purpose of life, to be able to do these wonderful things. And therefore, Krishna calls out, in the Bhagavad Gita, he calls Krishna, oh mighty arm, the conqueror of the enemy. And sometimes he means by that, the one who can conquer the real enemy, the crest jewel of all enemies, the mind. One who can control his mind, he is the most powerful of warriors, the most successful of fighters. He continues,
This is the final verse in his instructions. Therefore, since envious and pious activities cause a body in which one suffers in the next life, why should one act impiously? Considering one's welfare, he's talking about, even from your own selfish point of view, considering only your own future, why do this thing, this impious, sinful activity? One should not envy anyone. For envious persons must always feel harm from his enemies, either in this life or the next. And then he concludes, as your youngest sister, this poor girl, Devaki, is like your own daughter and deserves to be affectionately maintained. You are merciful and therefore should not kill her. Indeed, she deserves your affection. So Kamsa wasn't moved at all by this, by the philosophy, by compassion, by mercy. He was so absorbed in his selfishness, thinking that what's good for me is the definition of good. So Sukadeva Goswami explains, he continues, O best of the Kuru dynasty, Kamsa was fiercely cruel. That means his heart was so hard, he did not care if his sister was going to be killed. He was callous and hard-hearted and cruel, fierce. And he was actually a follower of the Rakshasas. Therefore, he could neither be pacified nor terrified by the good instructions given by Vasudeva. He did not care about the results of sinful activities, either in this life or in the next. When Vasudeva saw that Kamsa was determined to kill his sister Devaki, he thought to himself very deeply. Considering the imminent danger of death, he thought of another plan to stop Kamsa. Purport. Although Vasudeva saw the imminent danger that his wife Devaki would be killed, he was convinced of his welfare. He was convinced that auspiciousness would come, because at his birth, the demigods had played drums and kettle drums. He therefore attempted another way to save Devaki. So he was named Anaka Dhandavi, because at his birth there were such auspicious sounds. He knew that inauspiciousness cannot be part of his life. So therefore he made another attempt from a completely different angle to save the situation, because his preaching, trying to bring some sobriety, some soberness into Kamsa's consciousness to break his cruelty and selfishness, he saw that wasn't successful. So he decided to take another practical tact. As long as he has intelligence and bodily strength, an intelligent person must try to avoid death. This is the duty of every embodied person. But if death cannot be avoided in spite of one's endeavors, a person facing death commits no offense. One has to try one's best. One's duty is to try to avoid a difficult situation, a deathly situation. But if one has tried his best and it doesn't work, then one has to accept. Vasudeva thought, he considered, by delivering all my sons to Kamsa, who is death personified, I shall save the life of Devaki. Perhaps Kamsa will die before my sons take birth, or since he is already destined to die at the hands of my son, one of my sons may kill him. For the time being, let me promise to hand over my sons so that Kamsa will give up this immediate threat. And if in due course of time Kamsa dies, I have nothing to fear. Prabhupada once told me that if something is auspicious, do it immediately. If something is inauspicious, put it off. So he's putting off, he's going to put off the deaths in his family because they were inauspicious. So the immediate problem is Devaki. So let me save her life first. So I'll promise Kamsa to give him each of our children, and he can do with them as he likes. But we know what he would do, because he's called death personified. He'll kill them. So cruel. Prabhupada's short purport. Vasudeva wanted to save the life of Devaki by promising to deliver his sons to Kamsa. In the future, he thought, Kamsa may die, or I may not beget any sons. And if a son is born and I deliver him to Kamsa, Kamsa may die at his hands. For by providence, anything could happen. It is very difficult to understand how things are managed by providence. Thus Vasudeva decided that he would promise to deliver his sons to the hands of Kamsa in order to save Devaki from the imminent danger of death. Put it off. If something is bad, put it off. Put it off. Because you don't know what providence is going to do. It may reorganize anything. So put it off. Put it off. Something bad. And if something's auspicious, don't put it off at all. Do it immediately, because again, for the same reason, you never know what providence is going to do. You don't know what fate is going to throw in your direction. So good things do immediately, and bad things put aside for some time. Put them off. So this is how Vasudeva was thinking. An example he gives. When a fire, for some unseen reason, leaps over one piece of wood and sets fire to the next, the reason is destiny. Similarly, when a living being accepts one kind of body and leaves aside another, there is no other reason than unseen destiny. Purport. When there is a fire in a village, the fire sometimes jumps over one house and burns another. Similarly, when there is a forest fire, the fire sometimes jumps over one tree and catches. Why this happens, no one can say. One may set forth some imaginary reason why the nearest tree or house did not catch fire, whereas a tree or house in a distant place did. But actually, the reason is destiny. What does destiny mean? What is the Sanskrit word? Anyone know? For destiny? Huh? Antara? Antakaran? Antara. Or sometimes? The? Also sometimes it's called Daivi. Or just Or another way to say it is, this is God's will, or fate. It happened. Why did it happen? Because that's the way it is. It happened. This is what fate is. This is what destiny is. Sometimes fate is very kind to us. Sometimes fate seems very cruel to us. But fate is just fate. This is the way the world works. One can't understand why. One can make up a theory. This is what Prabhupada is explaining. One can set up a theory that explains everything that happens in the world. This is the ultimate scientific way of doing things. The cause and effect, Newton's type of theories of cause and effect, that if you understand everything in the material world, since everything has a cause, then you can understand every effect. You can trace it back to its cause. And if you can control everything in the world, you can control everything, all the effects. That's how science works, trying to dominate, control nature in that way. But it is impossible. It is impossible. Ultimately, everyone has to put up their hands and say, okay. Either if one's an atheist, one will say, oh, it's just nature, or this is just the way things are. And if one is a devotee, one says, this must be Krishna. This is Krishna's mercy. So a devotee, because he has the consciousness to accept everything, everything that fate deals him as Krishna's mercy, Therefore, he lives always in Krishna's mercy. A devotee lives always in Krishna's mercy. And therefore, he alone can be peaceful and free from anxiety in this world. Suridam Savabhutanam, because Krishna is the dearmost friend of everyone. One may set forth, Prabhupada continues, some imaginary reason why the nearest tree or house did not catch fire, where a tree or house in a distant place did, but actually the reason is destiny. This reason also applies to the transmigration of the soul, by which a prime minister in one life may become a dog in the next. One doesn't know. Karma is very tricky. Very tricky. When Prabhupada says this, the prime minister in one life, does anyone know what he's referring to? Yes, you know. That he, some astrologer told him that that Nehru, after he died, became a dog, a second dog, someone's second dog in Sweden. And Prabhupada thought that was very clever. He liked that, so he would repeat it in here. He's put it in here indirectly. That one doesn't know what's going to happen. How is that? We just heard, yam yam vapi simram bhavan. Whatever you're thinking of at the time of death, it sounds very mechanistic, very mechanical. But actually, it's very hard to predict what one's next life is going to be. Because in this life, we accrue so much karma. And we have billions of lives of karma. So which portion is going to be given to us for our next life? We don't know. We have so much karma. Say if one person kills one cow, he has to take a birth for every hair on that cow's body. So in one killing, which may take a few minutes, he's gotten millions of lives, billions of lives of karma. So how much karma do we carry around with us, actually? Unlimited karma. So which portion, which small handful of that unlimited karma are we going to get immediately to dictate our next life? One can't say. So in that's up to the super soul, which ultimately is who is the controller of this, of the material world. So that's what we mean by fate or destiny. It's Krishna. It's the super soul. The work of unseen destiny cannot be ascertained by practical experimental knowledge, and therefore one must be satisfied by reasoning that everything is done by Supreme Providence. Put your hands in the air and you say, Hare Krishna, Ram Ram, whatever happens, okay. Okay, Krishna, I'm in your hands. And to depend upon Krishna, gotripte varanam tata, that is the essence of surrender. To be engaged in Krishna's service, to please Krishna, and then say, okay, however you want to deal with me, it's going to happen anyway. Okay, I'll accept that as your mercy. This is an exalted consciousness. This is surrender. This enables one, jivati om mukti padesa dayabhak, it enables one to go back to Godhead. Just this one ability to be able to see Krishna's mercy in whatever happens. But it is not easy, it is not cheap. It is easy to see Krishna's mercy when good things happen, but when something terrible happens, oh, the mind just wants to rebel. It rejects seeing it as Krishna. Krishna's hand in it. But yet, as also Vasudev said, one has to try one's best to do to save oneself. But ultimately one has to accept Krishna's mercy. 52. After thus considering the matter as far as his knowledge would allow, Vasudev submitted his proposal to the sinful Kamsa with great respect. Vasudev's mind was full of anxiety because his wife was facing danger. But in order to please the cruel, shameless, and sinful Kamsa, he externally smiled and spoke to him as follows. Prabhupada's purport. Sometimes one must act duplicitously in a dangerous position, as Vasudeva did to save his wife. The material world is complicated, and to execute one's duties, one cannot avoid adopting such diplomacy. Vasudeva did everything possible to save his wife for the sake of begetting Krishna. So since one has to act in difficult times, one has to act in one way or another, that doesn't save one from the reactions for one's improper activities. One still must get reactions. But why wouldn't Vasudeva get a reaction? Because his motivation wasn't at all selfish. His motivation was to bring Krishna into this world, to save his wife for the sake of begetting Krishna. So it was pure. It was done without any false ego. And therefore, there would be no reactions for this. Prabhupada continues, this indicates that one may act duplicitously for the purpose of saving Krishna and his interests. According to the arrangement already foretold, Krishna was to appear through Vasudeva and Devaki to kill Kamsa. Vasudeva therefore had to do everything to save the situation. Although all the events were prearranged by Krishna, a devotee must try his best to serve the purpose of Krishna. Krishna himself is all powerful, but it is not that a devotee should therefore sit idly and leave everything to him. Very, very important instructions for devotees. We have to try our best in Krishna's service. We have to know what our duty is and do it. Even though, on the other hand, we know everything that happens is Krishna's mercy. But yet we have to try to do the best thing for Krishna with devotion and then accept everything as Krishna's mercy. We can't do things improperly or do nothing and then accept, oh, must be Krishna's desire. No, that isn't in the devotional mind. That is our fault. That is a fault. That is not the way a devotee thinks. Prabhupada continues, this instruction is also found in Bhagavad Gita. Although Krishna was doing everything for Arjuna, Arjuna never sat down idly as a non-violent gentleman. Rather, he tried his best to fight the battle and be victorious. So Vasudeva very liberally made a proposal to Kamsa. Oh, best of the soba, you have nothing to fear from your sister Devaki because of what you have heard from the unseen omen. The cause of death will be her sons. Therefore, I promise that when she gives birth to the sons from whom your fear has arisen, I shall deliver them all unto your hands. Sukadeva Goswami continued, Kamsa agreed to the logical arguments of Vasudeva. And having full faith in Vasudeva's words, he refrained from killing his sister. Vasudeva, being pleased with Kamsa, pacified him further and entered his own house. Each year thereafter, in due course of time, Devaki, the mother of God, and all the demigods gave birth to a child. Thus she bore 8 sons, one after another, and a daughter whose name was Yogamaya, Subhadra. Vasudeva was very much disturbed by fear of becoming a liar by breaking his promise. Thus, with great pain, he delivered his firstborn son, named Kirtiman, into the hands of Kamsa. What is painful for saintly persons who strictly adhere to the truth? How could there not be independence for pure devotees who know the Supreme Lord as the substance? What deeds are forbidden for persons of the lowest character, and what cannot be given up for the sake of Lord Krishna by those who are fully surrendered at his lotus feet? So different persons, they have no limitations of what they can do. A pure devotee can give everything to Krishna. There is no lamentation. A saintly person, he'll be truthful even up to the point that Vasudeva was truthful. And a demonic person, he'll do anything for his selfish interest, even the most abominable of things. What is forbidden for persons of the lowest character? So every year, Vasudeva and Devaki, Devaki had a child, and Vasudeva dutifully delivered them one by one to Kamsa. And Prabhupada explains in his purport that he was a pure devotee, Vasudeva, and he was so eager to see Krishna appear as his child from the eighth pregnancy of Devaki. Therefore, he wanted to deliver all the children quickly so that the eighth turn would come and Krishna would appear. So he was so eager, one child after the next. He so much wanted to have Krishna as his son. What an exalted devotee will not do for the pleasure of Krishna. So he begot one child every year so that Krishna's turn to appear would come as soon as possible. Comments. He's empowering you to ask the questions tonight.
Can I ask a question from last night?
Yes, but you can't ask a question last night tonight. Yes.
I seem to have maybe misunderstood. It's mentioned specifically the embryo without specifying a gender.
Yes.
The disembodied voice, and you brought mention to that.
Yes.
However, it became an issue with the seventh child, as I recall from the play. It said, this is a girl.
Eighth.
It's not. But no, the eighth, the seventh child was the eighth child a girl or seventh child?
The eighth child was Krishna,
right?
But they thought it was Yogamaya because Yogamaya was
swap.
Yes.
Sorry. Yes. Correct. And the point was made: you don't have to kill this child because it's a girl, and the prediction was that you're not going to be killed.
Let's see when it comes up how that's described. But I think, from my remembrance. It's that, what do you have to fear from a girl more in that way, as opposed to due to the prediction? Although in the Krishna book it probably does explain it like that because it's simpler. I think that's what it is, if I remember. Because after all, he was very powerful, Kamsa. Even the demigods were fearful of him. So what is he have to fear from this girl? And then Devaki says, don't do it, you know, she'll become favorable and submissive to you. She can marry your son. Please don't do it. So what's there to fear? Don't kill this child. That's how I remember it, but we'll see what comes up.
It's interesting to note the inner workings of both Vasudeva and Devaki yesterday, with Devaki's inner joy.
Yes.
The fact that Kamsa was suddenly aroused to be so cruel and angry because of his voice, and now Vasudeva killing, having all of his children killed, that he's going quickly through this experience that would be so painful.
Looked at externally.
Because normally, I know when I've read the Krishna book years before, I thought, how horrible, you know, how much he must have been suffering, you know, as the children were killed one by one. Why should Krishna let somebody be in this such a horrible position of suffering? But there's some internal workings that are ununderstandable to me because I don't have love. So,
and also the demigods are, they're the ones who are the voice in the sky that tell Kamsa, you should kill her, basically. Look what you're doing, you fool. You're facilitating your own death. Because they want to hurry the thing up too, so they're causing this, on one level, this trouble. And then ultimately it's Krishna who's doing it. So there's all these different levels of understanding.
And then Narada Muni comes along.
And then Narada Muni, he wants to speed it up still further, but we'll get to that. And then you see that, who are these six ones? We'll read something about that. Who are the six children that were killed? So it's all so intricate and complicated. One of the points that comes from this that Prabhupada was explaining is that rather than try to figure out why it's happening, because it's very, very complicated between karma and this level of Krishna's desire and this level and this and that. Better to just accept everything as Krishna's mercy, but that shouldn't stop you from doing the right thing, what you understand is the right thing in service, but do your duty, do your service, accept everything as Krishna's mercy, the good, the bad, the terrible, the abominable.
I guess you'd have to have some sort of inner inspiration. This is, I mean, not like Vasudeva Devaki, but something given to you to be able to do such painful things.
You have to be deeply Krishna conscious.
Otherwise, you couldn't necessarily do it.
Your faith would have to be so deep, yes, and you'd have to understand deeply that your soul, for a start, that the body isn't you and that you can't save it anyway. So the understanding that you can't save it anyway is one is easier than to understand the positive. So the depth of realization has to be there for otherwise to get one above the gross material platform, which necessarily is a painful platform to be on.
I guess this is where what do you do if you can't do a question is coming right. When you
suffer, unfortunately. But then Prabhupada also explained something on that too. That if you're a materialist, then there's nothing but that suffering. But if you're a devotee, there is a special net of Krishna's kindness to his devotee that makes up for what one lacks.
Some protection.
But sometimes it only comes at the end. That's when you thought there was no net, one appears. The parachute opens. Krishna seems to do that a lot, actually.
Maybe that's to kind of keep life exciting.
Well, one reason is that it keeps us humble, because you see, at least I see, that the mind flickers. It doesn't remain tightly fixed on Krishna, so that helps us understand how far we are from actually being devotees. Which, so if nothing else, we become a little humble, which is half the way there.
In that falling experience.
Well, yeah, in the experience of not having taken shelter of Krishna. So Krishna allows, next Wednesday we shall finish this chapter and move onward. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Shri Prabhupada. Sri Krishna's birth Ki Jai. Soon, it's getting closer.